A guaranteed 3 points, Andy Carroll joked about as Reading played West Brom on the weekend. Were Steve Brewster in charge? Alas, with their disliked manager gone and the Royals not on song, the Baggies boinged away from Berkshire with those 3 points the very same. Welcome to the Tyler Sen Podcast, episode 312, the podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans. I'm your host, Mark Mayo, with you again this week to discuss, sadly, a Reading defeat to keep us, well, still in the playoffs, actually. So it's not all doom and gloom, but we'll have plenty to talk about at the West Brom game. And to do that with me is the view from the Dolan end, Ben Thomas. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, all right, thanks, Mark. I haven't been on for a little while, have I? And it just made sense that I would come on and talk about a loss. So maybe we should just announce it after the result and then go from there. But happy to be on regardless.
Hey, I always ask. You're always one of the first in line. Maybe not the first in line, but you know, we all have our favourites, don't we? So it's great to have you with us tonight. And we'll be getting into that West Brom game in just a bit. Got a lot of mailbag questions for you guys as well. News bites will be filling you in on what's going on with the other Reading teams, and of course, looking ahead to the Swansea away game on Tuesday night for Reading. Let's get into the recap in just a second. As always, a thanks to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, and our Patreon subscribers for putting their hand into their pockets for our virtual tip jar, the little Tyler Stender reserve fund for when we libel all of these good folk involved with opposition teams. So let's get into the recap then and discuss Reading 0, West Brom 2.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
So it was 2-0 then at the Select Car Leasing Stadium on the weekend. The game, it's Reading. I remember speaking about this on the podcast last week, Ben. I'm sorry that you weren't on it, but we hadn't won beforehand anyway, so it wasn't like you missed much. But this was a game we really thought the Reading getting into. We knew that Steve Bruce was going to go in reality. It was a sad reality for Reading, a sad reality for Andy Carroll, who choked about it before the game, hoping that Steve Bruce would still be in charge. But West Brom had an awful record going into the first 15 minutes of games. Seemed like a good chance, even with a caretaker manager, for Reading to get into the game, get early, get at them and see what they could do. But just didn't really happen, did it? Nothing really clicked into place. And ultimately, 25 minutes in, West Brom take the lead. And from there, Reading have their backs against the wall against a team that, because of how bad it's been, as soon as they get that first goal, the record flips, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, the worst thing that could have happened this week for us is that they got rid of Bruce so early in the week, because it gave Richard Beale, who is not related to the fella at QPR, because I thought he was and he's not. Mick Beale, yeah. Well, I kept calling it Ian, which was really bizarre, obviously. it was very difficult. You know, once he'd gone at the start of the week, he knew that they would kind of set up differently. They would chop and change, losing side because they had nothing to lose, really, with the form that they had. You know, not one away for the whole season. We had, I think, going into yesterday, one of the best, if not the best, home form in the league. And the kind of the cards get stacked a little bit, really. I was very frustrated with yesterday. You know, very I wouldn't say angry, I suppose. I joked about it on the video after the game, but very, very frustrated, because I felt that we still had enough to get something out of the game, and we just didn't show up, really. I know, obviously, we had a couple of changes, you know, obviously with Lumley coming out and, you know, a couple of other people missing, but I felt like we had enough to, you know, on paper, to get something out of the game. And it's these inconsistencies in performance that are, you know, going to be a problem for us this season. We weren't horrific, you know. I don't think there's any need for a massive overreaction in terms of performance. But if you look at, you know, the wider picture of how this season is going to pan out, we've got a, you know, tricky game midweek against Swansea, which we'll talk about later on. Bristol City, we've got a home, which could go either way the following week, and we're kind of back round again in that cycle where we could be sort of four or five games without a win. And that then becomes a bit of a problem in terms of mentality shift and everything else. Performance-wise, I think we sat up well enough to be able to to play them at their own strengths. I think we massively Mitch Hutchinson yesterday. I think, you know, having Yeardom in that back three just doesn't work for me. And I think we need that stable kind of middleman, which didn't work yesterday, you know, with Holmes, who was in there. It just looked a bit disorganised. I don't think we've really got ourselves set up in terms of playing those two, in terms of Carroll and Joao up front. And it just didn't look right from the off, really. And that was, I suppose, the really disappointing thing. And straight away, you can tell the stadium's a bit flat. The players sort of feed off the atmosphere and it goes around in a circle. So, you know, very, very disappointing to not get anything out of the game. I don't think we deserved it, quite frankly. You know, Alex Ray said that we probably deserved a point. I don't agree with that. We didn't take our chances. They did. And that was that, really. That was the 3 points gone. But it's going to be interesting to see how we now react, having had, you know, effectively two losses on the bounce after that, you know, phenomenal result and performance against Norwich, you know, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the home record. Reading still do have the best home record, but we have played a game more than the likes of Blackburn, I think Millwall as well, who are only a point behind us. But Reading, you know, top of the table in that sense. So it does show that these things happen. Reading aren't going to finish top of the home form table this season. And if we do, then this game doesn't matter really, does it? Because we'll still have finished the job to a lot of respects. But I think for me, this is the game that you can question the selection to some extent. I think we're persisting with Jeff Hendrick, while I don't particularly believe that he should be keeping Tyrese Fawner out of the team. Well, I don't believe that, like, flat out. Ince going back to centre mid works, I think, as a principle. But then having Guinness Walker as the left wing back, we are a victim. We have to remember, you said Hutchinson wasn't fit. Napsar wasn't fit, who in theory should be starting these games, probably ahead of McIntyre, who dropped off too much for the first goal. Guinness Walker shouldn't be starting these games because Rahman is the first choice left back. And Guinness Walker, I think, was a bit dodgy for the first goal. Buzanis came in, and I'm not really going to blame him for either goal, really. The second one, I mean, it probably only really happens at 1-0 down that you let these sort of breakaway goals happen. But it was a big, big error from Hendrick at the end of the day, even if it was a good finish. So in terms of the defending, you're right. I think it is the lack of Hutchinson and stuff. It just means that Reading haven't got... I wouldn't say that we haven't got a plan B, because we haven't really ever been able to use a plan A of all our first choice players. But when it comes to things just not being done correctly and on the right moments, there is just a little bit that Reading fall down. I think it's tactically as well as on a personnel level.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, the thing that troubles me at the moment is the midfield, because if you look at the last two games, the defensive midfielders we've had, Alloum and Hendrick in theory really in those roles. And you look at a QPR game, you know, Friday last week, Alloum was obviously cost us the game. There's no two ways about it, because he, you know, if he doesn't commit that challenge, they probably don't get anything out of the game. Obviously, he does give away a penalty and they score it. And yesterday, obviously, Hendrick was guilty of losing the ball. Whether or not it was a foul or not is irrelevant, because the ref didn't give it and you placed the whistle and so forth. And he just goes straight down the middle. Obviously, still has a lot to do. There's that cliche, I'll get that in early doors. But it's a great strike. And, you know, they end up with two goals to the good. So defensively, in terms of that midfield block, it's not working. And really, they need to address that very, very quickly. Now, whether or not that's Fawner that comes in, I don't think they've got much choice now, because they have to mix it up a little bit. Who else they've got in that position, it's very, very difficult, really. You don't want to drop into there, because he's probably one of our more creative players. I don't think it helped that he got booked very, very early on, because a lot of his impetus and energy went, because he had to be careful to not be sent off. And really, it just didn't have the balance that we'd probably expect. You know, we'd probably want to push Ince, or if he's not available or not playing on Tuesday, then potentially Ajora comes into that number 10 role, just to have some sort of link-up, because, you know, the ball would go forward and Carroll would do his best to hold it up. Jao was kind of on the edges, but it never really stuck. And we couldn't get anything going in that final third, because they were always playing catch-up in midfield. So it's something that needs to be looked at quite quickly. Defensively, I don't think there's anything they can do at the moment in terms of personnel. I think that's going to have to stay as Yeardon Holmes and McIntyre. Obviously, you mentioned Saar. I would agree with that, but clearly he's nowhere near being able to play at the moment. Same with Hutchinson. So it's very, very difficult, really. And the other thing I'd sort of mention, really, is the substitutions, because, you know, Long clearly is able to play some part. So for me, I didn't really understand why he didn't come on yesterday. And it's the same with, and I always get his name wrong, but Mbengue, how do you say it?
Probably say Mbengue is probably where I'll go with that. But he's a kind of midfielder and even a right wing back option. But yeah, I wasn't sure why Long didn't come on, because fundamentally, and Fauna as well, you can do more in attack than Loom.
Yeah, I mean, but at that point we're chasing the game. So, you know, you bring Mate on for Carroll, but we all know that Mate's not a striker. And yet the only people that seem to not know that are the coaching staff. You know, we've always said that. We said it on this pod, said it in articles repeatedly. He's not cut out to play in that system. He needs to be right wing and that's it. So there are elements that were very, very frustrating yesterday. Whether or not it would have been different if Ince was on the touchline, don't know. That might be doing a disservice to Alex Ray, but it the whole thing just didn't look right from the off. You're looking now to Tuesday and hoping to get something out of it. But I'd be gobsmacked if there weren't any kind of changes, certainly midfield for Tuesday night for sure.
Yeah, well, let's get into the mailbag then, because I do want to talk about Zhao and Carroll, but I know there's been questions about that. So let's hear from Alex Ray, and then we'll get into the mailbag and hear what you guys think this week.
Yeah, listen, we're obviously disappointed in the manner in which we lost it. I felt we created enough chances, particularly in the second half, to try and get something out of it. I think if you're analysing the goals and which they got, I think we have to defend that better in the first half. It was a cheap goal from our point of view, too easy. And then we're asking for a reaction in the second half. And I think we actually asked about four or five questions of their goalkeepers, produced some decent saves at key moments. And we have the benefit of seeing a replay. At the time, I'm berating the referee because I think everybody in the ground thought it was a free kick. And having had the benefit of hindsight, I think it was proven right.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
Right then, bit of a diversion away from all things immediately Reading, with Andy Taylor's first question saying, is there anything that can be done about the standard of refereeing in the Championship? Seems to be getting worse, and yesterday was exceptionally bad. Yes, we probably didn't deserve the win, but some of the referees' decisions were baffling. Nesta Guinness walked a penalty, McIntyre was taken out and then booked for diving. The only thing you can do is VAR. Because there's, you know, the kind of general improving standards of refereeing is obviously something that the EFL are always trying to do. So VAR is the only thing that you can really introduce into the Championship that will change things. We saw it today with the Liverpool Man City game, a very good VAR decision, in my opinion, that stopped Man City going into the lead, which massively changed how the game would have panned out to how it ultimately did pan out. Is there going to be a time, do you reckon, in the next 3-4 years where we're going to see VAR in the Championship? Because is it a matter of funding or intent or general interest, or what is it?
In terms of VAR, I don't know. I can't imagine watching Reading in a situation where we're using VAR regularly at this current stage. Has the refereeing got worse? I don't know. Has it become an excuse? Yeah. I mean, I don't feel that the referee was as bad as everyone was making out yesterday, personally. I mean, the two things that I think he got wrong were obviously the McIntyre booking, because it was right in front of me and there's no way that he would go over in that position. So that was a clear foul. And the other one was the free kick from the kickoff. I mean, I'm not quite sure how that's possible, really, because the fella just ran straight into, I think it was Hendrick or Loom. Probably was Loom, actually. And that was frustrating. It kind of disrupted the flow of the game. But it doesn't excuse our kind of shortcomings in the game, really. In terms of VAR long term, I think, honestly, it all depends on what happens with this blackout. And the way that they move that. Realistically, if they do change the blackout and kind of lift the 3 o'clock kickoff bans effectively, there will be more money, more TV money floating around, and they will probably want to look at the product and, I say, make it more dramatic. That's not quite right, but there'll be more impetus to kind of on the cameras and how, you know, the officials are operating and how much help they have. I think with the live games, in terms of just being in the stadium, it's kind of easy to gloss over those mistakes. But we know with Premier League and the way that runs, that VAR is absolutely vital to the running of that. Whether we agree with that or not, again, is kind of irrelevant as a fan. But it's very, very difficult. And the challenge then is, if you say we're bringing it in for the Championship, you've got to look at League One and League Two. And I'm not sure at the moment the money or the desire really from the AFL is there to do that. So it's a very, very difficult one. I didn't think the ref, as I said, was horrific yesterday. But there were probably times when they needed a little bit of help, and had he gone to VAR or had a bit of support in those situations, he probably wouldn't have made some of the decisions that he made yesterday. So it's very, very difficult to balance that one. And I really don't have the answers at the moment. And I don't think the football authorities have, because obviously, you know, VAR has been a very mixed bag this season. So it will be an interesting one to watch for sure.
Yeah, well, I think my personal view of VAR is actually a slight tangent off from Reading, I fully appreciate, but I went to the England-Germany game a few weeks back, and this probably one of my first actual experiences of VAR in a stadium. And it is crap, because you have no idea for two and a half minutes what's going to happen. No explanation or anything. You wait and a penalty gets given. It's like, oh, fair enough. I guess it was a foul. But it has to improve. And I think it's still early days for VAR, and I'm sure it will improve, but probably want it in its proper product when it does get to Championship. And I think it will, because whether it's 5, 10 years, whatever, it's inevitable, isn't it, that technology will continue to rise, as it were, without trying to sound too Terminator-y. But I'll have a quick point on the 3 o'clock blackout idea as well, because obviously there's a bit of a discussion over the TV rights. I think it'll probably end up being taken off of Sky, because the league hasn't really grown in the last 5 years, obviously pandemic and stuff. But yeah, my personal opinion is it will probably go to someone like Amazon, who can kind of offer to shake things up. I know, I don't know if you remember the old ITV Sport days, Ben, for the that absolute.
I don't know what
the best phrase to say without libeling someone that those magic beans that got sold.
Yeah, I mean, it was horrific, and it was a very very iffy time for a lot of clubs, really. It's not something that will ever happen again, I don't think, because the money has to be there and it has to be secured and everything else. But it's not a bad shout with Amazon. You know, they seem to have a fair bit of cash lolling around, and I think, you know, again, the point you made about the league not growing, I think that's fair. What I will say about the blackout, because we could do sort of 3 hours on this in terms of getting everyone's views, but for me, I will always choose to go to games given the choice. I don't think there's anything that replicates that, and never will. However, for someone that is unable to travel away, not much at all really now, because, you know, family commitments and stuff, I would pay to watch, you know, a 3 o'clock kickoff if we were playing, Wigan away or Sunderland away or whatever. So there's two sides to it, really, because they wouldn't have got that money from me out otherwise. But then if they're charging 10 quid, I would pay that. But then I'd still go and get a season ticket for the home games anyway. So it's a balancing act, really. And clubs have ultimately got to survive. They've got to be able to get money through the door to be able to get the best possible players in to compete, blah, blah, blah. So all I would say is I'm glad I'm not on the end of having to choose that. And I think realistically, if people don't want to go to football, they won't go to football. That's kind of the reality. And we're seeing that now with Reading in terms of attendances dropping and everything else. So it's how much money they would secure if they did have that blackout element in place, really.
Yeah, and there's the idea of regional blackouts and all sorts of stuff like that. And you are right, we could do 3 hours on this, but let us move on then and talk about two big fellas up front. And it's Lloyd Wall saying the two big men up front thing doesn't work. Need to pair one with Ince, leave room for another creative player to make chances. Jonathan Holdstock saying, are there any other examples of players who have played for us that have actually made our style of play worse? Carroll, the main example. And Fozzy saying, playing at home against an out-of-form team, two holding big men up top, how are we going to create two negative and not enough chances? And it's clearly not working. And I'm inclined to agree that I would love to sit here and say, you know, these two are really good players. Let's give them 6-7 games together. They will make it work, Zhao and Carroll. But I just don't see it because on the one hand, I don't think they fit together up front. Zhao much prefers being a lone man up front. 3-4-3 as a system, I think, really would work for him with Meite and Ajaria and or Ince as the wingers. Hoylett as well can do that, of course. That would work perfectly for Zhao. As for Carroll, probably would work as well. If we're going to play two up front, I think you need Long in there because he offers a, you know, just a different kind of game. With Carroll, he's not mobile. Zhao isn't mobile, but he needs a completely different type of ball forward to Carroll needs. So I know what Jonathan Oldstock's saying. With Carroll, we end up just lumping it forward. And the alternative to the argument of what I'm, or the other point of the argument that I'm making is that it doesn't work. We also don't get the ball wide to players who can put really good crosses in to then score goals. Hoylett can do it. And that's it.
Yeah, I mean, very little to add to that, really. I'd agree with pretty much everything you said. I mean, Zhao obviously wants to be or likes to be the most advanced player in the team. He can't do that with Carroll there. At times yesterday, it looked like Zhao was actually dropping a lot deeper than Carroll was. Carroll likes to get the header on the ball and knock it down. That's where you need someone like Long, or dare I even say it, Puskas. You know, someone in there with him, you know, getting those knockdowns and doing the running for him. But yeah, it's not going to work long term. But again, it comes back to this lack of personnel. Now, if Long was fit enough to start the game, I feel like he probably would have started, but clearly he's not. But then it goes back to, if he's on the bench, he's able to take some part in it. So I don't know why they didn't bring him on rather than swapping Meite for Carroll, maybe bring on Long for Zhao and see how Carroll and Long got on for the last 20 minutes or whatever. So that was kind of a bizarre, frustrating element to me. But yeah, everything I've said is spot on. We're not getting crosses in. If Zhao's playing on his own up front, he wants the ball into feet. You then have to drop someone back into the number 10 position there, like Swift used to do, and potentially Ajara could do once he's back playing. Ince can obviously do that too. So it changes the dynamic slightly of how we play, and I don't think we haven't nailed how we play up front and what the strengths are in terms of getting the ball from a service point of view into the players that are playing in those striking roles.
It's remarkable in a way that we're sixth in the league and we haven't thought of what our actual best 11 is yet. I don't think the manager knows that. I don't think we're even close to knowing that for a few positions. And B, whatever that best 11 may be, we certainly haven't seen it for about two or three positions at a time. There's always something wrong. So it's, you know, credit that we're sixth, I suppose, while this is happening. But yeah, I do think that 3-4-3 is the best solution. Any of Loom, Hendrick, Fauna can be the partnership in the middle. Any of Ince, Ajaria, Meite, Hoylett, etc. With Yeardom as a right and Rahman probably as the left, whether you want to call that 5-2-3 or whatever, then so be it. But yeah, I really do think that is what would be my preferred formation. Again, probably comes down to personnel with making sure that Ajaria, etc. are all fit to make it work. So Brian D has messaged us in saying, is there a virus or bug sweeping through the stadium? I wondered after yesterday's performance. Waldemar Janajak saying, if Liam Moore is fit, do you let bygones be bygones and put him in the side as a centre-back? He's surely still good enough. Now, this is a decision from Paul Ince to make to put Liam Moore back into the team, were he to be fit, let's say January, let's just put a completely arbitrary date on it because we don't know when it's going to be and it might never happen. But if this was to happen in January and Liam Moore comes back in, you know, kind of instead of or whatever a new signing it may be or something. But it's an interesting point because in a 3-4-3, you can definitely imagine him slotting in around Hutchinson and Holmes and Saar and people. And really offering something. It just it, It just depends how far you want to imagine that, how much your imagination has to stretch to get to that point. Because obviously there's the performance side of it, which I can kind of understand working. But as Woldemar says, it's the bygones be bygones. It's the relationship side of it for me that really struggles to see how that can happen.
Yeah, I don't think Liam Moore plays for Reading Football Club ever again, to be honest. I don't think it would be in anyone's best interest if he did. I don't see him being better than any of the players that we've currently got. And ultimately, he's had what is, you know, essentially a career-threatening injury. So for him to come back in and play in any championship side at this stage is going to be very, very difficult for him. Now, whether or not he drops down the leagues or he stays at Reading and see out his contract, no idea. I don't know. But I just don't see him. I just don't see him playing for us again. And, you know, if you're asking me personally, would I have an issue with him playing again? No, I wouldn't. I think the whole thing about him sort of being a scapegoat has become quite ridiculous, to be honest. That's my personal belief. Would I be happy to see him play again? Not particularly, but it doesn't mean that I, you know, don't like him or have an issue with him. I just don't think that he is any better than what we've currently got in the side. So to me, it's pointless. It is an interesting point, but I can't see in any world that he comes and plays for Reading again. I really don't. And whether or not he ever gets back to match fitness is by all accounts from what I'm told up for debate at the moment, because it was an incredibly serious injury that he's had. So it's not a conspiracy theory to limit his time or to get him away from the club. He's still attending games, still watching matches. You know, he's still in and around the training ground having sort of rehab. So it's very difficult to see a way back for him to play in this current team.
I just think that I agree. I wouldn't be pleased to see him back in the 11 on a personal point of view because of, you know, what's gone on. And it sounded like it was a problem with the owner. It wasn't a problem with Veljko Paunović from last season that he had. It was much deeper with the club that he was, you know, this ridiculous statement of being stripped of the captaincy and stuff. So it's hard to imagine that necessarily has been cured. You just know for an absolute fact that he'll get a terrible reception from quite a lot of fans that will, maybe it'll be a minority, but it'll still be very vocal. And any kind of mistake that he were to make or whatever, I just don't think it's worth it. And you are right, we've got a lot of centre-backs. If we're leaving McIntyre out to be more, and there's got to be a good reason for it, hasn't there? And at the moment, that isn't there. So Sean Burgess' final question of the week then, saying thoughts on Andy Yeardham as captain. When was the last time he did a post-match interview? Nesta Guinness-Walker gave 110% yesterday, looked a real threat, but sadly made a costly mistake. Why on earth was he out for the post-match interviews, and where is the club captain? I think that I don't really listen to BBC Berkshire post-match very often, but it's pretty much always the manager. I'm pretty sure they get players to talk, mix zone and stuff that comes out during the week, but I must be honest, I don't know who does that very often, etc. Looking through the club's post-match press conferences, I think it does, with the player they get, it does kind of change and everything week by week. There's seldom does a player do it twice in a particular stretch of time. And yeah, it's a good point to say that Yeardham hasn't come out and done it on the club YouTube and what have you this season. Maybe Guinness-Walker asked to come out, having struggled with the, you know, his error and everything. I don't know the circumstances, but my problem with kind of questioning players is for their captaincy role, Ben, is that there's so much that goes on behind the scenes that I couldn't have a Scooby-Doo as to whether a player's a good captain or not. I always remember thinking that Joby Mackenough, when he got made captain, was a weird decision because, you know, I was obviously a teenager then, but I still thought he's a winger. That's not really in the thick of things. He doesn't look like a loud vocal player. You know, you've got a bit of a stereotypical view of captains in your mind sometimes as to, you know, big shouty players and all this sort of stuff. And yeah, Joby Mackenough was like one of the best ever captains that Reading have ever had. So I know what Sean's saying with the being the front and centre, being an old style club captain, but I mean, I'm just not in a position to criticise Yeardon personally because I guess I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the captaincy thing for me is, it's not redundant in the modern era, but you look at clubs and you think that the successful teams have leaders all over the pitch. And that, again, that's not supposed to be a cliche. But, you know, you look at where we are now compared to last year, and we've got more players setting a better example on the pitch than we had this time last year. So does that then make them captain material based on their ability or what? How does it work? You know, Tom Holmes came out against QPR, said what he said, and he got absolutely slated by not just our fans, but everybody else. So you think, well, you know, are post-match interviews these days relevant? Is it sensible to do it straight after the game when you're likely to say something that's going to get picked up and, you know, overexpanded and exaggerated? Why not wait until the Monday or the Tuesday or whatever and then do it? Like, does it need to be straight after the game? So that would be the first thing I'd say. And the second thing would be really, like, you want players that are in and around the kind of leadership group. So, you know, you look at our current team, you think, well, all right, Lumley's had, you know, one bad game against Rotherham. But other than that, it's been pretty vocal on the pitch. Like, he organises people. Same with Sam Hutchinson. You know, Tom Holmes, when he stepped into that void, has done quite well in terms of setting the example. You know, Ince obviously would never be able to be made captain because that would be weird. But, you know, he sets example by the amount of energy that he expends, the quality that he brings to the team. Same with Andy Carroll. You know, he's got experience, he's got stature. So what makes a good captain? It's very, very difficult these days. You know, we've gone past the era of kind of the Roy Keynes and the, you know, I'll say it's topical, but, you know, the Steve Bruce at Man United and being...
The Tony Adams, that doesn't get more topical,
yeah,
topical,
you know, than Tony Adams. All those sort of players, you know, sort of Alan Shearer type people. We're not at that stage anymore. So if you're looking for people to come out and give sound bites after a game, yeah, I mean, maybe Yeardon isn't the one to do that, but I don't think it makes him a bad captain personally. You know, I think he just does it in different ways. So it's very, very subjective in terms of what people look for in a captain. And I would much rather see at our club a group of players that, you know, have the ability to lead by example on the pitch. Because that's again, another cliche for you, Mark. That's three in a row. But, you know, that's where you do your talking, right? You do what you need to do on the pitch. I couldn't care less what they say, to be honest, in press conferences and all the rest of it. I'd rather not listen to it. I'd rather see them go out on a Saturday or Tuesday or whatever and give their absolute best and win the game personally.
Well, with my journalist hat on, I must say that I do think that post-match press conferences are an integral part of football, and I think we should have more of them. With my journalist hat on, more content, please. I need content to feed my career. But yeah, otherwise, I know what you were saying. I think that fundamentally, it is absolutely true that you need more than one leader. And who knows, maybe Andy Yeardon being made captain was quite integral to him being kept on at the, or him agreeing to a new contract at the club. Maybe that was an important thing. He wanted that leadership role. Maybe he sees himself as having that. That's ultimately just speculation, but you can rule it out. So yeah, do always get in touch with the podcast. There's the email, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. There's the Facebook inbox. You can always message us via that. And of course, the call out on Twitter, which we always do before the recording. Right then, let's get into some news bites, fill you in with what's going on around the club this week.
You're listening to the Tarlhurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
So before we get into news bites, because I'll be updating you on the academy scorelines this week, a bit of a nod back to last week's podcast where we had the pub chat with Simon from Training Ground Guru, a very kind of interesting chat that was over the academy, Reading's academy status, the difficulty in Reading running their academy, and they've obviously been downgraded over the last year and all things concerning that. So definitely recommend that if you've not had it yet in your ears. That's on last week's show. Just go and find the time for that. It will be on the show description. Go and zoom straight over to that. Get a listen in the academy this week then. Under-21s, Kelvin Ebichoman, really good form at the moment. A hat-trick against Sunderland in the PL Cup. 3-1 win, that was. Same player scoring against Watford in a Professional Development League win. So Reading kind of fifth in the table, mid-table in that at the moment, all very tight. Early doors, of course, they go to Colchester on Tuesday night. The under-18s also next against Colchester on October 22nd. A recent defeat to Birmingham ended their four-game winning run. So, as we've mentioned before in the podcast this season, lower division for the under-21s and under-18s this year because of that academy downgrade. Over in the women's team, we're recording the podcast just after they have been beaten 1-0 by Arsenal in the Women's Super League. Good attendance at the Select Carl Eason Stadium for that Sunday. Yeah, it is Sunday, isn't it? Sunday evening kickoff against Arsenal on the TV that was on Sky. So they're next in action away to West Ham next weekend, and then they've got Leicester at home. That's the next home game at the Select Carl Eason, 2 p.m. on Sunday the 30th. Two teams at the moment haven't got a single point, only two goals between them in the WSL. Only one can go down, though. Probably going to be one of Reading or Leicester this year. Maybe Brighton or Liverpool. It's going to be one of those years for Reading. It's a lot of well-funded teams in the WSL at the moment. And Reading, the only team who have a men's team in the Championship. You've got a lot of Premier League teams otherwise. So it will be a big battle for them. Right, I think we are ready to go into the big match preview. We'll be doing that now to talk about Swansea away and Bristol City at home.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Welcome back to the Tarleton Podcast. It is time for big match preview and a chance to talk about Reading's upcoming games. This week, we are in action on Tuesday night away at Swansea, a 7:45 p.m. kickoff. And Ben, I'm sure you remember the rowboat scenes of last year, the 4-4 scenes. It really was a couple of cracking games last year against Swansea. However, we have only one win in 18 meetings. That obviously did come last year down in South Wales. So very tough game on the cards.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a funny old league this season, based on the fact that Burnley are top and they've won six games this year. So, you know, literally anything could happen. Swansea are kind of in a similar boat to us. You know, they're sort of 1 point off where we are, conceded 20 goals, same as us. So, you know, they've been prone to having a few shockers, as per yesterday when they lost 4-0. I'd probably say they're danger man in terms of Pirro. He's obviously suspended because he was sent off yesterday, so that's probably not a bad thing for us. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an interesting one. I don't think there's much between the two sides, really. It depends how we set up in terms of any changes that come in, if we can get a reaction from yesterday. But it's one of those games that you'd look at and go, I'd be delighted with a draw. You know, just get out of there with a point and then we're back home again on Saturday. So, you know, the idea, I guess, would be to go there and not lose the game. And anything above that is a bonus, really. But it's, you know, these games are becoming increasingly hard to call, you know, across the league. And I think realistically, these aren't games that we would have looked at the start of the season and gone, yeah, we're going to go there and win. It's more the home games that trouble me in terms of picking up points and making sure that you know we stay in the league ultimately. So it will be a fair matchup. I don't see it being a hugely high scoring affair. But as I said, I would happily take a draw.
Yeah, I think fundamentally any away game in this league, Swansea at eighth as well, so they're not a bad team at all, although they do have a negative goal difference, so maybe they're quite only 1 point behind us, quite alike us in a lot of ways. In terms of their home record, they've only won three of their 17 games, so, you know, they've fallen foul to the likes of Luton or Sheffield United have gone there and got a win before this season in South Wales. So I think It's a difficult one. Obviously, they got beat 4-0 by Burnley, as you kind of alluded to. But from a Reading perspective, it's so variable on what Reading teams show up. And do you think that Ince, presumably back on the touchline, not really mentioned this, but Paul Ince wasn't on the touchline, not that it really makes a huge amount of difference, because Alex Ray spent the entire game on Saturday on the phone. But for this game, do we expect quite a few changes, or do you think Ince will actually stick with the 3-5-2, stick with Cowell and Zhao to kind of make that finally come good?
I don't think he can really justify doing that, to be honest, because, you know, just lost two on a bounce, technically not one in three, although that's, that, you know, obviously that they are the bare facts. But we go back to the Norwich game, and as I've said repeatedly, it was probably one of the best performances of the season, if not the best performance of the season from us. But I don't see how he can stick with, you know, certainly the same personnel. Now, whether or not he changes the system to fit that, obviously always a possibility. I would like to see some changes to kind of shake things up a little bit. I think, as we said earlier, Fauna has to come in for one of Hendrick or Loom. I would like to see Ince pushed up a little bit further, and I'd like to see us just be a little bit more coherent in attack. Now, whether or not that means that he takes out one of Zhao and Carroll and Long is fit enough to start the game, not sure, don't know. There could be an argument to say that he could bring in, and I can never ever say his name, but Ihe Betterman. Is that a pretty good try, Mark?
Yes, I mean, I say Ihe Betterman, which I know for a fact isn't right, but I've just started to own it now until I hear the club say something different.
Yeah.
Bless the poor bloke.
But, you know, I mean, he scored a hat-trick, you know, last week or on Friday against Sunderland. So there's a you know, an argument to suggest that maybe he comes into the squad, certainly, maybe not start. You know, might be a bridge too far, but, you know, if the younger players are doing well and they've got confidence and are kind of, you know, some of our players are kind of out of form, then why not throw them in? It's kind of one of those where it's not a pressure cooker game, you know, it's not a must-win situation at this stage. So it could be a good game to kind of to try him out, certainly, and even if it's just for 20 minutes in the end. So there are a few possibilities. There's not as many possibilities as we'd like, for obvious reasons. We know about, you know, illness and injuries and all that sort of stuff. And as you said earlier, we still don't know our best 11. And I think that's largely because he hasn't had sort of 15, 16 players that have been fit that you could say could be thrown into the team in terms of a starting point. So, the key really is kind of getting that defensive midfield sorted and then looking at what can happen up front, really. And I would like to see some changes just to show that there's a bit of impetus in terms of freshening it up, because we're not going to get results currently playing the way that we're playing with those personnel in place.
Yeah, that I mean, that the thing I said about the 3-4-3 earlier, I think certainly stands true for this game. Whether you throw Abichone in or not, who I said bless him, not because I think he has a bad name, because we're useless at saying it, is why I said it. So I think I'd like to go for the 3-4-3, basically, as I set out earlier on. I believe it's on Red Button. The good people at Live Soccer TV tell me it is. So if it's not, don't crucify me. But so that's the 7:45 p.m. game. We'll have a quick word now on the Bristol City game as well, because that's Saturday. The podcast will be back after that game. And I think the Bristol City game, my opinion on it will probably be entirely in the context of the Swansea game. This is a perfect little block now of Championship games against two teams that, I mean, in reality, probably aren't going to challenge for promotion. They have their good days, they have their bad days. If Reading come out with 4 points or above, it's a great week. If we come out with two, you might just handle it, but certainly, you know, three would be fine, and etc. So really, if I take this game as a bit of a block. If we go to Swansea and win, then we lose at Bristol City, be disappointed, but fundamentally it doesn't change anything about what we know about this team. If we go and lose them both, you know, it's starting to look a bit dodgy. And obviously if we win them both, everyone's very happy. So that's all kind of obvious. But my point is that I'd quite like to take these two games together to understand more about this team and to rate it, because fundamentally in the Championship, you're going to have good and bad days. And if it's all about stringing those good days together now, and Reading have started to string a couple bad days together, and that turnaround has to come. And Bristol City, you know, I quite like them as a club. I think they're perfectly fine. I have no animosity towards the club like Bristol City. But fundamentally, at home against them on Saturday, 3 p.m. kickoff next week, it's just the sort of game that Reading have to win, really.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, they've got a tough game now against West Brom on Tuesday away, and obviously they come to us on the Saturday. So that potentially is a tough run of games for them. I think they are bottom or close to the bottom of the current form table at the moment. So, you know, they're not doing great. Obviously, you know, lost at home to Millwall yesterday. So again, not a fantastic result for them. So yeah, they could be. By the end of this week, we both could be in this sort of similar situations where we're both sort of desperate for the 3 points. Again, like I did with the West Brom game, I would fancy us to get a result out of the Bristol game, regardless of what happens against Swansea. I think if we go and lose, you know, to Swansea, it's going to make that game even more important. And really, as someone mentioned on one of the comments I saw today, you know, if we can get to 30 points by the World Cup break, that'd be a pretty good return. And I'd feel pretty confident about our chances moving forward sort of when play resumes in December after the World Cup. So, you know, we have to get keep those games ticking over. We've got obviously Bristol City Saturday. I think we play Preston on the 4th, is it, of November at home. You know, they're really, that's 6 points that we need to be having in the bag by the time that game is finished at home. So it's going to be it's not going to be easy. And as we said, nothing in this league actually is. There's another cliche for you, but it's really about picking up the points at home. And if we can do that on Saturday, regardless of the result on Tuesday, then I think we'll be okay long term.
Yeah, see the logic with that. Let's finish the show then with the area where logic completely deserts us, and that is the prediction league, in which only one of us said that we'd lose to West Brom. That was Westy, who was previously bottom of the table, and he got 2-0 as well. So congrats to Westy, finally leaving 1-1 behind and taking some points. So it means that Ben, you're still top, joint with Handbags, which means you can get first dibs at the Swansea score this week.
I'm going to go 1-1 against Swansea. I think we've got enough to get a draw out of that game. As I said, I think it'll be low scoring, but I think we'll get a point.
Yeah, it's an absolute nightmare, this sort of prediction, isn't it? Because you can genuinely convince yourself of any score pretty much would make sense. I'm going to go for a 2-0 defeat. I'll be pessimistic and see if I can be rewarded. Because the good thing about predicting Reading defeats is obviously, of course, there's no way to, you know, it's the minorest crumb of comfort if we do lose. But then if we win, it doesn't matter, does it? So you're happy. So, yeah, I'll go for a 2-0 defeat because, I mean, the logic behind that is very simple, isn't it? That fundamentally, we're not playing particularly well at the moment, in the last couple of weeks at least, and or maybe just in the last game. But at home, Swansea, very, very liable to turn it on and bounce back from what was a very difficult result for them on the weekend. So, as I say, we'll be back after the Bristol City game. Ben, enjoy the week. Hopefully, we have a couple of good wins for us.
No problem. Yeah, thanks, Mark. And take care, everybody. If you're going up to Swansea, enjoy it. Lovely stadium up there. Lovely part of the world as well. So, yeah, have a good one, everyone.
Definitely. We'll all be watching that one, whether you're at home or in the stadium or listening on the radio, etc., etc. Stay tuned to the Tireless then for the full coverage of that as well, with the updates on Twitter and, of course, the report ratings and whatnot on the website afterwards. And we will be back next week after what will hopefully be a very reassuring week in Reading football. Come on, you arse.
You smile, funny how the crumbs always leave. smile.